Well, welcome, folks. Here we are one more time at Core Brain Journal, Dr. Charles Parker, and we have a very interesting, provocative guest tonight. And, you know, forgive me for saying this all the time, but I was so enthusiastic talking to him before we got started. And what's happening is Brendan Gogren is a very deep liver expert, and he's going to be joining us tonight to tell us about something that many of us do not know about, and really, until tonight, did not care about. But when we get finished with this conversation, you're going to want to think about your liver much more effectively. So welcome, Brendan. We look forward to talking to you.
Hey, well, thank you very much, Dr. Parker. Appreciate being on.
Please call me Chuck. We're two guys getting some stuff done out here.
All right, Chuck, it is.
Okay, so I'm going to read your bio and then we'll go from there. So Brendan holds a degree in molecular biology from the University of Connecticut and his MBA from Bentley University. Brendan has spent 15 years in the healthcare field and was an executive for a major nutraceutical manufacturer before starting multiple companies of his own, the latest being LiverMedic. He conducts health lectures to both physicians and the public. His research focuses primarily on gut health, liver health, endocrine system, adrenal fatigue, and optimum diets that can prevent this whole situation from turning akimbo. He's been at the forefront of developing high-quality formulations for nearly two decades, folks. So he's going to talk to us about these formulations tonight in addition to the observations that we have about liver pathology. So LiverMedic is the second company he founded, both with the mission of helping to improve the quality of life. So, Brendan, tell us a little bit about yourself personally. Where are you? Who are you? And where do you live, for example?
Yeah, I live just south of Hartford, Connecticut. I've been a Nor'easterner for a long time. interesting you should bring this topic up. We're actually moving myself, my family, and the company down south to Florida for reasons of, well, I don't care for the snow and ice, and I want to be near the sun a little bit more. So yeah. That's the purposes of that.
Well, you know, when I was talking to you beforehand, I was thinking you were from Southern California. You have bright, concerned, I'm going to get something done quality in your conversation. So go ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted.
Oh, I like that. As far as sort of where I started and how I sort of matriculated to this point, I think you kind of covered it really well. My background's molecular biology. I always had an interest in biology and how things worked and physiology and in particular diseases and how they crop up and how they can be avoided. And when I was in the pharmaceutical realm and doing research in the pharmaceutical industry, it was all let's find sort of the solution in nature, pull it into the lab, see if we can synthesize it within a test tube and then isolate it and then make it into a drug to make lots and lots of money. If there are side effects of this, let's see if we can develop something for those side effects. It was a business model. It's a business strategy as opposed to a solution-based real solutions for people. So after doing that for too long, as I call that sort of the evil empire, I decided, you know what, I got to go back into the natural realm and start really making, alternative medicine for folks who don't want negative side effects and deserve better. So that's what I ended up doing there.
Well, how did you pick the liver of all things? I mean, you and I both know now at the end point, because we've had a little conversation, I know why you picked the liver, but tell our audience how that liver came up right there, so to speak, in your face.
Yeah, I didn't pick the liver, and I didn't pick the gut. They both chose me, for lack of a better explanation. So I took a little bit of a hiatus. I was doing some consulting for a medical device company, and I had some very close friends and family members, believe it or not, my mother included, who were coming down with this is a big box topic, metabolic syndrome. And metabolic syndrome, and I'm going to break down this pathology real quick for the listeners, is when your diet is poor and drives a lot of the problems that we're going to discuss, and you're not paying attention to ingredients in personal healthcare products, and all of these things end up coming into the system, they change the microbiome that you have inherited and create an environment that essentially creates micropores within the gut lining. And so nutrition, the foods that you were eating previously and you were breaking down and absorbing, that has decreased. And the partially digested foods, parasites, bacteria, other things that you don't want into your body are coming from the lumen and passing in. That creates chronic inflammation. Those toxins then end up filtering into the liver. The liver catches them. They build up in the liver, specifically within fat cells that the liver creates to make sure that they don't escape into the body and create additional damage. The liver stops functioning properly. You get type 2 diabetes. The buildup of the fat gives you obesity. The chronic inflammation gets reduced or tamped by additional cortisol being released from the adrenal glands, giving you adrenal fatigue, decreasing your ability to handle stress, interrupting your sleep cycles. Your sleep cycle is very critical in the process of detoxification, so that negatively impacts the liver once again. So, and of course, we all know about the increased levels of toxicity within the body and that dovetailing into the massive trends, upward trends of cancer within this country and the rest of the world. So these are not isolated. They are a domino. And once you understand the pathology, then we can get to the solutions. So that's the whole point of getting this piece of education out.
So very interesting. I think you said that so well. Because there's a quality of malabsorption is one of the problems, because that's going to significantly interfere with the immune system. And then you have the misabsorption, if you will, of all these other things. And they have to run through the liver, as you said. It's just, it's awesome. I mean, I was talking to you a little bit beforehand about the things that come into the body. I think so many of us don't really think of the relevance. I'll tell you just confidentially, not confidentially because we're on air, but as straightforwardly is the word I was looking for.
Confidentially to 30,000 people.
So, you know, I've been into liver, but I've been into the liver, the front gate, the cytochrome P450, and the back gate, the phase two, and thinking about that repeatedly, talked about it, lectured about it for 20 years because I've been on it since 96.
Yeah.
But never really thought about the things you're bringing up here tonight, because you just, one doesn't think about them, because first of all, if you thought about them, what in the heck would you do about them?
Yeah, you end up becoming sort of a health freak that when you end up going to holiday parties at your family's place, they say, please bring your own food. We're not making diets for you. But I mean, when I go out there and we put together lectures for folks, and again, as you said, physicians and the general public, what we try to get across is that our food supply has changed drastically in the last 40 years. In addition to that, so have personal care products. They've gone from sort of let's pick them out of the ground and go through some degree of processing to let's develop them in a test tube because it's cost effective and then stick them in a consumer product. And what we're finding is that say 40 or so years ago, when we took a look at liver disease, 75% of liver disease was driven by alcohol. We all understand that you take alcohol in, it's got some pretty nasty byproducts. You end up, if you don't take care of it, getting cirrhosis and then some worse things, unfortunately. So now let's fast forward to where we are here. We're taking in a lot more sugar and carbs. We're taking in a lot more toxins. We're eating a lot more processed foods that are less from the farms than they are from chemical companies like Dow and ADM and all that stuff. And on top of that, you throw into the mix GMO foods, which we can have a further discussion and a deep dive in that if you'd like. But essentially, what I like to say is when it comes to GMO, understand you're getting two things, a lot more herbicides and a lot more insecticides and pesticides. So you're getting toxified. Okay, so that's, forget about the genetic engineering of it, and that has its own dangers. You are drinking Roundup, for lack of a better discussion on the subject.
That's a very important point. That is a terrific point, because people, you know, even GMO, as much as people talk about it, they don't know what they're doing with it. GMO, it sounds like some kind of functional medicine quackery. You know, what is it?
Yep.
But Roundup is not quackery. I mean, that kills the bugs out on your deck.
Right, exactly. And the funny thing is, if people understood how Roundup operates, so there's a cocktail of chemicals in there. Not all of them are described because they're under patent, so we don't know what they are. We do know about glyphosate and a couple of others. They are designed to enter an insect and then disrupt their digestive tract to essentially turn it into a slurry. And guess what happens when we ingest those chemicals? They do essentially the same thing. So when glyphosate is brought into the body, it starts to poke holes in the gut, as it's designed to do with insects, then travels to the liver and inhibits those cytochromes that you had talked about, those P450 cytochromes, which are important in both phase one, especially in phase one, but also in phase two. So they increase the amount of toxins that get into the body and then decrease your body's ability to remove them. So GMOs are a very dangerous thing to start, you know, putting on our family's dinner table. So that's important. Now let's transition to the personal healthcare products like we had talked about earlier. So anything that goes on the skin, 75% transdermal. If you're putting underarm deodorant on and it's in a nice warm place with, you know, a lot of, it's a humid warm place, that goes way up. So take a look at the ingredients on the back of your deodorant, on the back of your toothpaste, on the back of your shampoo. I can go on and on, you know, lotions, perfumes. Makeups are terrible because they typically carry a lot of heavy metals, lead and mercury, especially eyeliner. These things are getting into the body. And as I like to tell people, if it's got more than 8-9 letters and you can't pronounce it, why are you putting it on your skin or ingesting it? That's not a good thing, because that's going to go right into the liver and have to be removed from the body. And if the liver gets overwhelmed, see, here's the other thing that people don't typically take into account. We're talking about 500 different chemical reactions that take place in the liver. The liver, and I've spoken to cardiac surgeons and neurosurgeons, and they all agree with me. Aside from the brain, the liver is the most important organ in the body. And it is that because of all of the regulatory responsibilities, in addition to removing toxins that it carries. And if you go ahead and throw stuff into your body that start to inhibit its function, you're going to have a lot of problems with the endocrine system, with type 2 diabetes, and it spirals from there. So
it's amazing. I mean, when you think about it, you bring to consciousness, I didn't realize the rate of absorption through the skin that you just talked about. Because I think, you know, all of us use underarm deodorants. The question is, how toxic are they? I've done hair analysis in my office for many years now. And so often we see that aluminum right up at the top. It's like, where did you get the aluminum?
Right.
And, you know, am I eating aluminum? I'm not eating aluminum bars. And so many of the deodorants have straight up aluminum, and they're just absorbing it. And one of the things we do is we tell them, I didn't know this about the liver connection, but that's what's going on. They're actually absorbing it through the skin.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when we talk about aluminum and mercury and lead, and I think everybody understands that once it gets into the body and it gets into the body in such amounts, and the amounts we're talking about are trace amounts, where it can cross the blood-brain barrier, let's, you know, discuss the physiology of the brain for a second. Well, the brain is a continuously growing and dying organism. The cells die, the cells regrow. Axons end up regrowing all the time. Every time you have a new thought, every time something goes into your head that you got to remember, an emotion, whatever, those are typically creating dendritic growth. So what those heavy metals are doing is they're attaching to the building blocks of an axon and inhibiting the other building blocks to continue. You can see it's sort of like a Lego structure. And if you go in and you cap a Lego structure, it's not going to go anywhere. And that's part of the problem with some of these cognitive degenerative diseases. So again, we're going to come right back to the liver and say, how do we get this stuff out of our system? The liver is the organ in which that ends up taking place. So you have to have that organ at a high rate of function in order to avoid these things. And avoid putting it on your skin and ingesting it, for sure.
Well, Brendan, I was interested in reviewing your literature. We didn't talk about this beforehand, but I thought your numbers regarding how many people in the community have liver disease and how many people over 50 have liver disease. If you could share that with our audience, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So one in three people walking around have some degree of liver disease. And I'll discuss what this spectrum looks like in a second, because there's a lot of different terms that we use for people at different stages of liver disease. And then over the age of 50, we're talking about one in two people. So every other person has liver disease, has a liver that should be higher functioning, that isn't, and is creating problems as a result. So when we take a look at the liver disease spectrum, we have to start at the beginning with just straight up liver disease. Now, it can be non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which we commonly refer to as the acronym NAFLD, or it can be driven by alcohol. But as again, what we talked about before, 75% of this is driven by our food supply and or personal healthcare products. So that means that there is between 5 to 8% concentration of fat cells within the liver, inhibiting its ability to properly function, also stemming some of the blood circulation to the hepatic cells, creating cell death. Okay, that's what that is. It's dangerous, and we need to lower the amounts of fat concentration within the liver. And again, when you get a lot of toxins flowing into the body, they concentrate in the liver, thank goodness. When the liver cannot kick into phase two conjugation, that's the phase in which we detoxify these things. They are fat-soluble toxins. Okay, so let me back up for a second. Two phases in the liver. Phase one is called subtraction. That's when the liver takes a look at whatever the substance is that looks pretty foreign to it, and they say, okay, I can pull off an amino acid off of here, I can pull off a vitamin. Now this thing that is I've left behind, I don't know what to do. It's highly toxic, it's probably radicalized, it'll oxidize stuff, but we'll let phase two handle it. These two phases are uncoupled. In other words, phase one can happen all day long, 24/7, no problem, creating all kinds of really dangerous toxins. And phase two is sort of the responsible party to take these toxins from a fat-soluble state to a water-soluble state where it can run out of the body safely. If that doesn't happen, the liver has one last trick up its sleeve. Create a fat cell, load the fat cell with these toxins, and then store it for later. The problem is, later doesn't come, fat cells build up, and that's what creates a lot of the problems for the liver and blocks proper blood flow to the liver and inhibits its proper function. So that's what we're looking at. So at one end, we have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease or alcoholic fatty liver disease. Once it gets, it creeps up between 8 to about 10 or 12%, we go into NASH. And then if we haven't taken care of it at that point, it goes to fibrosis, where you end up seeing a lot of scar tissue within the liver because there has been a lot of cell death. Beyond that, we get into cirrhosis, and that's a really dangerous area because by the time you would get to fibrosis, even at that point, you can retrieve a great deal of your liver function back if you reverse the process by which you got there. Once you get into cirrhosis, there's not a whole lot you can do to reverse the damage, and you just sort of have to live with it. So we want to be catching people, you know, right on the front end of this, preferably before you get into fibrosis. You can reverse this damage. You can't do it with drugs. You can't do it with drugs. I want to make sure people understand that. Yeah. So as soon as you take a pharmaceutical product, that product has to be broken down in the liver. Guess what? That's putting an additional labor on the liver. So that's not really going to help. You need to do it naturally. So
Brendan, take a minute to tell our listeners, we have some professionals listening, I'm sure, but let's talk to the listeners about what NASH is, because that's a step after the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease.
Yeah, and again, that is just sort of, if you can think about it as NAFLD on steroids. So we've gone from 5 to 8% concentration of fat to about 8 to 12%, almost a doubling. And of course, what that's going to do is that's going to create a lot more hepatic cell death. You're reducing the blood flow to these cells. The enzymes that are very specific, obviously, to the liver, they start to exit the hepatic cell upon necrosis or cell death. Then they end up going to the bloodstream. They get picked up on a test, and your doctor says, you know, you've got some liver problems. But at that point, right after NASH, that's when we start to creep into an area where you've got pockets of cell death that are so high that fibrous tissue, scar tissue, starts to invade the certain parts of the liver to the point where it is difficult to sometimes remove and certainly inhibits a lot of the liver organ function. So I'm a big believer in catching this thing early. This is a big trend. If we were to take a look at this even 10 or 15 years ago, this wasn't on a whole lot of people's radars. If I had a graph where I could say, look, this is the trend line on NAFLD, this is where GMO production was, this is antibiotic use within the food stream, you know, all of these things are almost on a one-to-one correlation. So antibiotic infiltration into the body has doubled in the last 10 to 15 years. And if we have some physicians that are listening there, I know that their ears are going to perk up and start burning at this point and say, you know what, that's not true. Scripts have gone down by about 5 to 10% over the last 10 or 15 years. Mm-hmm. And you know what? They are right, and I am right. So what's happened is there's been a consolidation in the cattle, pork, and poultry industries. And along with consolidation means more animals on less land. They are, you know, walking around in their own feces, and these animals cannot be diseased before going to slaughter. Otherwise, they can't go into the feed stream. So what they do is about 60% of the, I want to say it's 60 to 65% of the antibiotics being produced in this country goes to take care of animals right before they go to slaughter. So those things are getting into our body, and they're doing the same destructive things as if we were going down to CVS or Walgreens and picking up the scripts. So, and that is obviously changing the microbiome, right? We talked about before, and when you change the microbiome, you are reducing the good bacteria that they're essentially have a symbiotic relationship with us in the gut. And what moves in typically, or because they are the most opportunistic, are candida. And when they get into an overgrowth, they start to release things like aldehydes. Aldehydes are very bad for soft tissue. They start to break down the soft tissue, puncture holes in the gut. So the good bacteria are gone. The malnutrition is there.
Killed by the antibiotics.
You got it, exactly. The candida move in. Along with the candida, you get also an increase in a number of parasites and parasitic organisms, and they do some damage to the gut lining as well. You know, one of the things that we commonly see is an increase in the amount of people going to a gluten-free diet, and there's a couple of reasons why that's the case. I really don't think that there is a genetic reason for this. In other words, if, you know, years ago we identified, you know, 3 to 5% of the population that needed to go gluten-free because of their sensitivity, that hasn't all of a sudden risen to 20 to 25%. What's happening is that it's being influenced by the feed stream. So once we start pushing GMO products and getting candida overgrowth and some of these other things that are now, because we don't have these wonderful good bacteria keeping them at bay, our immune system now has to pick up the slack, and there's a lot more stuff coming into our bodies, toxins, partially digested foods, and so forth. One of the main reasons why there's a massive increase in allergies. People are now more sensitive to gluten. Also, a lot of times farmers will tell you that they can't go to harvest. Well, when they go to harvest, they can't have their fields lay there and get wet. And glyphosate and Roundup is very good at drying out a crop. So oftentimes they'll go ahead, they'll cut down the crop for harvest. They'll have a rain come through, and they'll have to use the Roundup or glyphosate in order to dry out their crops. So you're literally getting crops that have just been more or less soaked with pesticides and herbicide. Those things are now coming into the body at higher concentrations, doing additional damage to the gut. People are reacting to that, in addition to the two or three proteins that are commonly found in gluten that cause, they cause an increased secretion of zonulin within the body, which down in the gut increases the span in the J channels, which is the distance or the channel between epithelial cells, which is in effect increasing leaky gut, and those same proteins travel past the blood-brain barrier, sit in synaptic clefts, causing brain fog. And that's typically what people who have either celiac disease or gluten sensitivity, they complain of bloating, gas, stomach pains, IBS, and brain fog. And that's all the same stuff. So, in my opinion, a certain percentage of those individuals are predestined genetically. Another larger percentage of people are actually reacting to the increase in pesticides and herbicides doing damage to the gut lining and gut health.
So, what an excellent summary. And the candida then are actually growing into the cell wall. I mean, through the cells, between the cells. I don't know that physiology. What happens with the candida? They do put hyphae into the gut wall. Is that right?
Yeah, they do that, absolutely. And then they start secreting aldehydes, and the aldehydes are in part in order to get themselves anchored, just as you had spoken. And of course, that degrades the more or less the lining of the epithelial cells themselves. The epithelial cells start to break down and release proteins, and your immune system, not typically used to seeing the types of proteins from within an epithelial cell, your own body, so now this becomes an autoimmune issue. So we've got a little war taking place down in the gut when we have an infiltration of candida. And a lot of people will see the vaginal yeast infections. They'll see the infections under their fingernails. They'll see a lot more psoriasis and eczema. They won't understand what that is. They'll end up going to your physician, and they'll end up giving you a script for it, but not understanding that it's actually the candida that is now systemic in the body that's causing those problems. So the more education we get on this topic, the better. A majority of people have leaky gut. Again, because of the food system, a majority of people have candida overgrowth, and then you have the 1 in 3 people with fatty liver disease and 50% above 50. So we want to catch this trend now. We want to make sure people
true.
Are educated.
I mean, yeah. Really, it's just you're listening to you is like watching a doggone movie of the gut. I mean, you're doing such an excellent job of describing it. Tell our audience a little bit about biofilm, because that's the next level in terms of how the bugs protect themselves, and I think that's absolutely relevant for taking care of business.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll be honest with you. The stuff that I am discussing right now, don't be intimidated by this information. I didn't know a lot of this stuff about 4 or 5 years ago. I had to research it. I came across physicians that were telling me this stuff that are on the cutting edge of scientific research with the naturopathic and functional medical fields. So biofilm is interesting. So typically what happens is we end up secreting IgI and into our lumen, and that sort of takes care of sort of overgrowth of parasites and virus and heavy metal and candida. But when the microbiome gets disturbed to the point where it can no longer keep up with these things, they end up finding each other. And when they find each other, you'll end up with sort of these shielded globs of mucus from your own mucosal lining, and metals, virus, and parasites, and candida. And what typically takes place is they will start to form double bonds. And when they form double bonds, it's like a ball and shield. The IgI can no longer get in there. I'm sorry, IgA can no longer get in there and penetrate this biofilm. The biofilm typically likes to reside in a safe place, which unfortunately is in these J channels. They end up squeezing right in between the epithelial cells, creating a gap and a channel for which toxins can then stream into your system. So how do we end up getting rid of biofilm? It accumulates over time. So the only way to end up getting rid of this stuff is a nice naturally occurring enzyme in nature, typically monolaurin or serrapeptase. Serrapeptase is the one that we recommend, and that's typically the strongest. That ends up breaking up the biofilm, displaying what's inside the biofilm to the lumen of the intestine, and then your own immune system can take care of those things and start to clear it from the body. That's really important.
Well, you know, LiverMedic has specific, I mean, you haven't talked at all about the supplements that you have. I mean, I didn't ask you, I'm not, and I think it's totally appropriate to bring it up, because what you've done is pulled together this information in some products that really significantly address the very issues that we're talking about regarding biofilm, you know, the whole problem of liver activity with phase one and phase two activity. Could you tell us a little bit about some of the supplements that you have that you've developed as a result of this?
Yeah, and again, you know, we obviously recommend people eating a proper diet, but when people aren't eating a proper diet, and sometimes they believe they're eating a proper diet, but they don't completely understand what's in their food, they get caught behind the eight ball. So supplements really, in my opinion, are to kick you over into a place where you can catch up to your own health. And so we've designed a number of products which we believe are pretty unique in this field, because we're attacking the pathology. So hepatobin, for instance, has eight ingredients, four of which dedicated to phase two conjugation, that detox phase that we discussed, and four of which are dedicated to repairing the epithelial cell layer, the gut lining within the microbiome itself. And the ingredients are symbiotic, so they work synergistically with each other. So, for instance, that we have psilocybin in the product, and most people will recognize that that's the active within milk thistle. The problem that milk thistle has is that in nature, the active ends up going up and down seasonally, anywhere between 5% and 20%. So we sort of standardized it. That's why it's psilocybin. That ends up, the activity of psilocybin ends up being increased when in concentration with choline, about 2 to 3 times. So we have phosphatidylcholine in there. So phosphatidylcholine and psilocybin. Phosphatidylcholine ends up helping to repair epithelial cell wall. So it's actually doing two things. The psilocybin is going into the liver and helping to replenish glutathione, which is a very important chemical naturally occurring in the liver to detoxify. Then we have SAMe, NAC, MSM, which are essentially methionine sulfur donators to, again, kickstart that phase two conjugation. And they are the most effective ingredients in doing so. So this wasn't sort of haphazardly put together. NAC is actually kept on hand in emergency rooms for individuals that could walk into the emergency room that have overdosed on drugs to sort of arrest any damage that typically happens within the liver. Then we have glutathione in there, and that's enteric coated to make sure that it ends up getting into the digestive tract, and that's actually not getting to your liver. A lot of people think that that's going to the liver. Nope, we've taken care of that with the other ingredients. Glutathione is very good at repairing epithelial cell walls. And then there's a number of other ingredients in there that, again, help with the repair of the gut and the liver. So that's the pathology. You want to sort of make sure that you guard the gates, and then once the invaders are inside, you throw them out. So that's sort of the basis behind hepatobin. And then, of course, we have Candida complex and serapeptase, and we use those two to help resolve a lot of the issues within the gut. And we believe that we're probably able to address a good 80 to 85% of the issues within the gut with those two products. Majority of these products are distributed through our physicians, and we've relied on them to give us feedback to change our formulations and alter them to increase effectiveness. And I'll tell you, we love our partners who are the physicians who end up giving us this positive feedback, because it's helped us out many fold.
Well, you know, it sounds like so many people need some serious inquiry about this. I mean, it's more, it's beyond, it's almost a platitude in a certain way, because it's just so commonplace. And yet, how do you recommend that listeners get this tested? What are some of the tests that they could have that would help them understand? Candida is going to be obvious on an IgG test. I mean, Great Plains is one of the companies that does a great job pulling Candida evidence out. and looks at IgG and immunoglobulin G, looks at food sensitivities that could contribute to the problem. But beyond that, what would be the test that you would want to take to your physician to say, how do I know if I have a fatty liver disease?
Yeah, probably the easiest one to do would be just a straight-up liver enzyme test. And a lot of physicians, you know, depending upon where they ended up going to school and what sort of philosophies and theories they believe in, it's usually a standard test between 5 to 7 different markers that they look at. But I've taken a look at a lot of these different things, and they're all pretty accurate. They're all essentially registering the amount of liver enzyme and some other factors that end up getting into the bloodstream where obviously they shouldn't be, and is in an indication that the hepatic cells are dying. So that's a good test to do. The other test that I would highly recommend, and if you we have physicians listening, typically my experience is a good one out of every two physicians isn't completely aware of this, is the MTHFR gene mutation. Okay, so this gene is for a reductase, and the reductase allows the body to methylate properly. And you might be thinking, well, why is that important? Well, there's over 150 different compounds in our body that requires methylation. If you are not properly transcribing this MTHFR gene, you are in that part of your physiology is inhibited, and you can't do that anymore. So what does that affect? B12 definitely affects B12. It has to be in the methyl form to operate in your body. It affects iron levels. It affects cardiac and brain health. It negatively impacts your ability to detoxify your system. It slows down or potentially inhibits your ability to reduce hormones and get them out of the body once they're finished doing their job. You know, the list goes on and on, but we're starting to find out that there's a lot larger segment of the population who have this gene mutation. And now I started to read some white papers recently in the last couple of years that indicate that there is some epigenetics involved here. So in other words, what we are eating, okay, specifically GMO foods perhaps, pesticides and herbicides definitely have an impact on this, could negatively be impacting our ability to translate this gene. So you may not start out genetically with the MTHFR gene mutation, but what you eat is slowly decreasing your ability to methylate. And, you know, hepatobin is specifically designed for those individuals, but you at least need to get that test and find out whether or not you have that gene mutation. It's very inexpensive. It's usually about $150, but you do have to ask for it specifically, and it would be very helpful, especially for those individuals who are constantly being told by their physicians your B12 levels are low, you know, you're anemic, your vitamin D levels are low. You know, you probably should take a look at that gene specifically.
Well, interesting. A lot of companies are now actually paid for, or the insurance companies are paying for that testing. You know, GeneSight and Genomind do the MTHFR testing, and a person can see it. Sometimes it's actually paid for by insurance because we're moving ahead so rapidly, and we can really see what's going on. We've been talking to Dr. Bill Walsh, and one of the things we do regarding checking out methylation activity is using whole blood histamine.
And excellent.
Whole blood histamine can tell you whether you're over-methylated or under-methylated. And one of the things that happens with MTHFR is sometimes it takes a snapshot of one piece of it, but sometimes people are actually over-methylated. And then a practitioner could go in and give them methyl products and create a more serious over-methylation quandary.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's an interesting problem, too. But this is really rich stuff. It's very, very good. I mean, you're saying, look, folks, listeners, you can get some testing and really see what your liver is doing when you're a young person. And we've already determined that if you're 50 years or older, you got a 1 in 2 chance that you have a problem. And certainly pursuing this, chasing it down, and then using some products that are going to address these issues once you identify them, that's the reason we're doing Core Brain Journal. That's the reason we invite really fantastic guests like yourself on, because people need to know this. This is not commonplace knowledge at this moment.
Yeah, and I'll say that I have to thank a lot of the physicians that we've have been partnering with. You know, we ended up coming out with the liver products, and they've been pretty successful in helping people reduce the fat infiltration. Liver enzyme tests end up coming back very positive, but they ended up came back to us and said, look, you are drastically underestimating the problems with gut health. And so that's why we didn't have that foresight. We're the liver medic. We're not the liver and gut medic. Yeah. So people don't completely understand why we're doing this. But, you know, it's funny when we go out and I've been going to, you know, the annual conferences for integrative medicine and naturopathic sciences for years. And 10, 15 years ago, only a small segment of the lectures were dedicated to gut health. Now, only a small segment of the lectures aren't dedicated to gut health. Everything is related to what you're eating, what you're taking into your body, what you're allowing to come into your body, the nourishment, you know, things that are pulling through your gut lining if you end up with leaky gut syndrome or passing the blood-brain barrier. It's just amazing.
Well, I think it's so interesting. I really strongly recommend that our listeners go over to your website and really look at the Liver Medic. It's, and you want to say what it is and talk a little bit about it before we close. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So on Liver Medic, livermedic.com, we have many articles. We also have a physician's corner. And for those individuals out there who want to take a look at the original white papers and research done by the various scientific journals, you can go ahead and do that. For other people, there's the articles that we put in there are easy to understand, easy to comprehend for the lay person, and sort of lay out exactly what are the connections between all of these different things that we've been talking about under sort of the header of metabolic syndrome. I think people will find it quite helpful.
Brendan, you write so well as well. I've taken a look at what you've put together over there, and you have a number of really scientific articles from PubMed, but you've written a number of articles yourself that put this package together in another way of understanding it. It's really strongly recommend the listeners to go over and linger. And you have some videos over there that even though they're short, they put together exactly what you said in just a few minutes. You can see exactly what's going on, and getting it visually gives you another a person in another perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much for noting that too. I appreciate it. It is all about education.
It is. Well, Brendan, we're going to have to wind up. I'm looking at our time. You know, we were talking before, and I knew we were going to wind up talking a little bit more. And it's so much fun because you've really helped me understand the need for my increasing my own awareness of how I'm approaching these problems. I've thought about phase one and phase two liver enzymes before, but I didn't really get the dramatic, clear message that you shared with us tonight, and I truly appreciate it. It's been great. Thank you very much.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. Thank you for having me on the show. It's been a fun time, and we'll have to do it again.
Definitely want to do it again, Brendan. Thank you so much. You have a good holiday.
Oh, you as well.
Thank you very much.